Begin this evening's shiur by thanking the Abitan family for sponsoring the shiur. We thank you for coming, and we thank you for your generous sponsorship as well. If you're wondering why I have paint all over my suit, I said I absolutely will not change my suit because I just had such a meaningful evening spending time with Eyeshine. I don't know if people here are familiar, painting menorahs with paint that does not come out from your clothing. And I said, this is the greatest badge of honor for me to come to the shul. People should see that this is how we spend our time. This is what clothing are made for. And I was just so overwhelmed painting menorahs with 25 young children who all lost parents in this neighborhood. There were 54 kids there tonight, but 25 of them do not have parents. And it's a staggering number of people. But the work that the volunteers of our community does is amazing. And to watch how the high school kids volunteer to help these children and how Sherry Hammer from our community spearheads this effort together with Stacy Zrian and some others, it's just overwhelming. It's amazing. And I told them that I would not change my suit because I was so proud to have ruined it for this purpose, and I would do it again. So I encourage all of you to take part in these kinds of activities. But back to the program of this evening, I'd like to begin with a story that I once read about the Maharil Diskin, not to be confused with the Maharal. The Maharil Diskin was one of the great Gedolim in Yerushalayim, and they once asked him, how do you compare yourself to your father? You know, your father was a great tzaddik, you also seem to be a great tzaddik. Your father was a great Talmud Chacham, you're also a great Talmud Chacham. Your father was a great genius, and you also are. Your father was an Eved Hashem, Eved Yerushalayim. So he said, I'll tell you what the difference is. It's true that when my father was asked to shaila, he was able to spit out a tshuva and he wrote whatever needed to be written and he gave it back to the people who asked the question, and I can do the same. But here's the difference. When they came into my father's study and they asked him a question about a Sefer Torah that fell down in a shul, my father fainted when they asked the question. When they came to me to ask the question, I wrote a response. And that is the difference. And the reason why I mention it is because, unfortunately, in our shul, we had this past Shabbos, an early minyan, where a Sefer Torah, Rachmana Litzlan, had fallen down in the Aron Kodesh, and there were many people who were asking over the course of the last couple of days, what is the protocol? What are we supposed to do? And it's a very important question as to what the protocol is, what is supposed to be done. So I was told that at the minyan, the Gabbai very innocently got up and said, you know, you're supposed to fast, and that's what everyone's going to do, but you should ask. And the truth is that he's right, and he's right. And the minig is that you are supposed to fast, but you should also ask the question because there's a lot involved here. So I have to say that it's been a whirlwind of a couple of days because since I've been asked this question by many, many people who were there, so much Torah. I've had the schus of learning so much Torah as a result of it because the tshuvas that are written on this topic are so extensive. If you look at the Tzitz Eliezer, his tshuva is 20-something pages long. I had to read through all of that since Matzah Shabbos. It's been a long sleepless nights. The Abiya Omer also has the longest tshuvas on this, and Rav Moshe Feinstein, and the Avnei Chefetz, the Reish Rav, the Divrei Chaim, and the Chacham Svi. There is so much written about a very fairly simple topic that all of us thought we knew everything about, and it turns out that there is just so much to talk about. So I begin with the Mishneh Berurah. The Mishneh Berurah says in Siman Mem is where he talks about the laws, the Shulchan Aruch talks about the laws of Tefillin, and there the Mishneh Berurah says, Nogim Ha'olam, we have a common practice, a custom, lihisanos, to fast, kishenofel hatfilin miyado al haaretz belon artikan. If one's tefillin fall on the ground without the covering, without the bag, so the practice is, says the Mishneh Berurah, that the person who dropped them is supposed to fast. Vuhu adin, and that also goes in the same manner, kishenofel sefer Torah, if a sefer Torah falls on the ground, says the Mishneh Berurah, we fast as well, afilu bin artikan, since we assume that tefillin is one level of sanctity, one level of Kedusha, but a Sefer Torah has a more intensified level of Kedusha. It's a higher Kedusha than a pair of tefillin. So if a Sefer Torah falls on the ground, even though it is in its wrapping, even though it has the mantle on the Sefer Torah, it doesn't fall off the beam on the middle of laning, still, we have the minhag to fast. That is what the Mishneh Berurah says. And then he says that there were those who said that even if the tefillin fall on the ground in their bag, you should still give tzedakah, even if you don't have to fast, you should realize that it's something serious. So, there's a lot to talk about. The Mishnah Berurah just writes it as a matter of fact. This is what everybody does. This is the practice. This is the minhag. But the truth is, you have to really look back and figure out, what is the minhag based on? Where does this come from? When did it start? Is it so simple that this is what we're supposed to be doing? What happens when this takes place on a Shabbos? Is there a little bit of a different discussion there? Perhaps not. And I thank you, Chaim, for sending me all that material. I didn't even have a chance to look at it yet. I was so busy going through the official Tshuva Svarim that talk about it, so I didn't look through all the cool articles that you sent, although it probably would have made my job a little easier. But this was really fascinating, riveting. So Rabbi Avadya Yosef, we'll begin with that, writes in the second volume of his Tshuvas Yabia Omer. He has, again, a very, very long piece on this topic. And he writes the following. He starts it off by saying, Hadavar Barur. I want everyone to know, as we embark on this discussion about fasting when a Sefer Torah falls to the ground, She'ein HaTainis HaZeh Chova Klau. This is not mandatory, this is not required, there is no obligation to fast. Rabbi Avadya frames the conversation by saying that. Ulam, although you have no obligation to fast if you are present when a Sefer Torah falls on the ground, Nogu Be'eza Mekomos, we do find that there are many communities who do adopt this practice, and they do take upon themselves to fast. Mishum Yikra De'araisa, because we have such reverence and such admiration for a Sefer Torah, that if we have the experience of watching a Sefer Torah on the ground, so then Rabbi Avadya says, we have adopted the custom that we fast. However, understand, he says, just before you get started, that this is not an obligation, this is not a requirement, it is simply a minhag. Says Rabbi Avadya, where does this come from? Where does this start? And he says that really it begins with the Pasuk in Parshas Kisavo, where the Torah says, the tochacha, if you do this, you're going to be blessed. If you do that, you're going to be cursed. And in the context of the tochacha, the Torah writes, Arir asher lo yakim es divrei ha-Torah azos. Cursed is the person who does not uphold the Torah. Now, what does that mean? What am I supposed to be doing to uphold the Torah? The Torah holds itself up. What is my obligation? What is my responsibility to uphold the Torah? And that's a very unusual pasuk, and the Yerushalmi picks up on it and says, V'chi yesh Torah nofeles? Is there a Torah that falls down that needs my help to pick it up? If you look, when David HaMelech was bringing the Aron HaKodesh back to Yerushalayim, he was punished for thinking that he needed to intervene, that he needed to make sure the Torah didn't fall down. So what's going on? What does this mean? Arur asher lo yakim es divrei ha-Torah azos, and he brings us to the Ramban. This is a very famous comment of the Ramban on Chumash, where he says that this is a reference. Arur asher lo yakim es divrei ha-Torah azos is a reference to a chazan ha-Knesses. That does not mean the chazan. Chazan ha-Knesses means the gabai. Chazan HaKnesses means the person who's in charge of the shul. So if you have a Chazan HaKnesses, a person who takes care of all the different things in the shul, and he is not careful to make sure that the Torahs are set up properly, that they shouldn't fall down when you open up the Aron Kodesh, that person, on that person, says the Torah, Arur asher lo yakim es divrei ha-Torah azos. Cursed is that person who doesn't take his responsibility seriously enough and doesn't understand that part of your job as the gabbai is not just to give out the aliyos, is not just to say who's going to be the chazan, but to make sure that the Sifrei Torah are safe and secure where they should be, and to ensure that there's not going to be any kind of problem that would make us feel uncomfortable with the Sefer Torah in the state that it is in. That is the way he begins, and he says, in order to take myself, if I'm the gabbai, in order to take myself out of that terrible predicament where the Torah says on me, Arur asher lo yakim es divrei ha-Torah azos, if Rachmana litzlan a Sefer Torah falls down in a shul, and now I find myself, you know, just aghast, I can't believe it, says the Ramban, the way to get out of the problem is by fasting. That will be a kapara, that will be a tshuva, and then you're going to go back to what the Torah says, Baruch asher yakim es divrei ha-Torah azos. Blessed are you who now is upholding the greatness and the reverence that we have for the Torah. That's what he writes. Okay, but we still don't have any indication that anybody outside of the gabbai or the person who's responsible for the falling of the Sefer Torah, let's say you have a chazan who's carrying a Sefer Torah back, and he's not being careful and he drops it. So that person, it makes sense, will have to fast. Or the gabbai, who is responsible for not making sure that this is safe and secure, that person is responsible. But where do we have this concept, this idea that anybody who's there, anybody who's present, has to fast as well? What does it have to do with me? I could not have done anything. I was not even aware that the Sefer Torah was not comfortable in its place. So why should this affect me at all? The truth is, Rabbi Avadya Yosef passed away just a couple of years ago, within the last 10 years. However, he quotes from the Chidah. The Chidah lived many years ago in the 1700s, where the Chidah writes in his Tshuva Svarim, in the Chaim Sha'ol, this is not only quoted by Rabbi Avadya, everybody talks about this topic, starts off with the Chida. So the Chida in his Tshuvas Chaim Sheol also was sent a question, what happens? I live in a community, a Sefer Torah fell to the ground in the middle of davening, we don't know what to do, and the Chida responds, hey, before you get into the details about how many days we should fast, and should it be a Monday or Thursday, 40 days, different options, he says, Ad sha atosho aleni im haroa chayv lehesanos. Before you ask me the question, whether or not the person who sees it, who's not exactly involved, who's not standing by the Aron, whether they have to fast as well, I ikra dedina hadepshita lachalachol amon Yisrael. This whole premise that you have, and that all the Jews all over the world assume, that somebody who's holding a Sefer Torah has the obligation to fast. I want you to understand that you can look through all of Shas and all the Rishonim and you will not find any source that says that if a Sefer Torah falls to the ground, you should fast. So the Chida frames the conversation in the same way by just letting us know that this is something that came on later on. And you should know that this is not an obligation. It is a minhag Yisrael. Now, we don't take minhagim lightly, but he says there's a difference between something that is a minhag, something that's a din derabbanan, a din deraisa. They're not the same. And the Chida says, after all, everybody knows that if my tefillin fall to the ground, I have to fast. So therefore, it would make sense that the Sefer Torah that falls to the ground, I have to do it also. But who said that's true in the first place? So that's where the Chida has an issue here. And he says, obviously, it makes sense why we should fast, because if the Sefer Torah was in a state of shame in my presence, it makes sense that I should do something about it, and I should take upon myself that I should fast or do something to show that I'm taking this event very seriously. But outside of that, says the Chida, we're not really exactly sure where this started. And the truth is, it starts with the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham quotes in the name of a Sefer called Mishpatei Shmuel. Nobody ever heard of it other than the few times that it's quoted in the Magen Avraham here and there. But the Sefer Mishpatei Shmuel, nobody ever learned. So the Sefer Mishpatei Shmuel was written in the 1500s by a great tzaddik by the name of Rav Shmuel Kalai. And he says that the minhag was, the practice was, that if you have a Sefer Torah that falls to the ground, this is what we do, we fast. What is that based on? So he explains that it's based on a Gemara Meseches Moed Katan. What does the Gemara say in Maseches Moed Katan? So the Gemara Moed Katan Chavav, the Gemara there in the third parak of Moed Katan is talking about many of the laws, many of the halachas of Avelis. And there the Gemara throws in a number of different aspects, not only of Shiva and Shloshim and Yud Beis Chodesh, but the Gemara also talks about whenever I have an obligation to rip Kriya. So the Gemara there says, what happens if I have a situation where Haroa Sefer Torah Shenikra, if I see a Sefer Torah is ripped to shreds, or the Yerushalmi has the Girsa, the Yerushalmi has the version, if I see a Sefer Torah Shenisraf, if Rachmana Litzlan, I see a Sefer Torah as it's being burnt, so what is my obligation? What should I do? How should I respond if I see a Sefer Torah Shenikra or a Sefer Torah Shenisraf? Says the Gemara, Chayiv Lekroa, you have to rip Kriya for that. Understand, we rip Kriya when somebody, Rachmana Litzlan, loses a parent, loses a child, loses a family member, and the Gemara here is saying that losing a Sefer Torah when it's ripped or it's burnt is comparable to the experience of losing a parent. You have to rip Kriya. It's comparable to the experience of losing a family member who I'm close with. And therefore it obligates me to rip Kriya. The Gemara says you have to rip Kriya for two reasons. Number one, because the letters of the Sefer Torah are gone. And number two, because the parchment of the Sefer Torah also has its own intrinsic sanctity, its own holiness. And because both of those are gone, the Gemara says I have to rip Kriya twice when a Sefer Torah is ripped. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara then goes on to say a few stories. Somebody once had to use the bathroom, and they took their tefillin off as they were about to go into the bathroom. As they went out, they realized that a bird came along and did something to the tefillin, took the tefillin away and ruined them. And he realized, I have to rip Kriya, this is terrible, how did I leave my tefillin out here without putting them in a bag? Anyway, the Gemara puts these two things together, and then that really is where the Mishpatei Shmuel gets this idea from, that when you have a Sefer Torah that falls to the ground, it should be similar to that Gemara where we're told that if a Sefer Torah is ripped or is burnt, you have to rip Kriya on that occasion. The problem with that is that if you look at the end of the Gemara says that there are a very specific set of circumstances when that applies. The Gemara clearly tells us it's only Kemaisa Shahaya Uvizroa. It's only when somebody comes and deliberately takes, in defiance, they take the Sefer Torah out of the Aron Kodesh or off of the Bima and rip it to shreds because they want to show how much they have a spite for the Torah. They do something audacious like that and they decide that they're going to show the Jewish community how much they hate the Torah, and as a result of that, they burn the Torah or they rip the Torah. How is that similar at all to a situation like this? Everybody's in shul. Everybody has great respect and reverence for the Sefer Torah, and it falls down. It's not my fault. It's not my problem. Nobody did anything wrong. Nobody was malicious in their intention. So that's a very debatable point. How is it possible that you can extract from that Gemara by Sefer Torah Shenisraf that you have to rip Kriya to our case here when a Sefer Torah falls on the ground that you're going to have to fast? That's a very, very hard extension to make, and that's something that many Achronim find very, very difficult in this whole equation, which takes us to the ideas that are found in the other Achronim. So the Tzitz Eliezer, also a very contemporary Sefer, he was the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital, and he wrote many, many volumes of Shailos U'Tshuvos, beautiful Tshuvos, and here, when he gets to this topic, he has literally at least 20 pages long, where he goes through the whole sugya up and down, tries to figure out all the different possibilities, and he quotes a passage from the Mahari Bruna. The Mahari Bruna is in the 1500s as well, and he also says that they had the practice that if a Sefer Torah fell down, they used to take upon themselves to fast. So he writes, what is this all about? And he explains as follows. He says, because it seems that a person who has that kind of experience, it's a siman min hashamayim that there's something wrong with you. If you were there when that experience happened and you saw that, it means there's something lacking in you. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the hashgacha that you should experience that, it means there's something terribly wrong with the way you're serving God. What it is, you have to figure it out. But it's a good idea to fast because that shows that you're going to take things seriously. Now, it just so happens that many people on a fast day just spend the day sleeping. So that's not meaningful at all. But the point of a fast is that it should make a person have a certain feeling, certain seriousness, give them a chance to have some introspection. And that really is what this is all about. And he brings a raya from the Gemara. The Gemara says there was once somebody who put on his tefillin, and he realized halfway through the davening that his tefillin, his ritzuas, were on backwards. Instead of being this way, they were the other way. And he said, oh, I can't believe this happened to me. I go to shul every day. I've been putting on tefillin every day. How could it be that it was backwards inside out? It doesn't make sense. I didn't put on tefillin the right way. And he took upon himself that he has to fast, because he said, if God allowed this to happen to me, it means there's something deficient in my davening. It means there's something deficient in the way I wear my tefillin. And that's why he took it as a siman min hashamayim. It's hard for us to say when something is a siman min hashamayim, when it's not. It's not always so easy to know. But he, in the Gemara, it seems clear that he took upon himself that it was a siman min hashamayim. It's not fair for us to tell somebody else, oh, this went wrong in your house. It means that this and this is going wrong, and it's because you're Mechal Shabbos. I was once at a levaya of a young girl who passed away tragically, and the rabbi of the shul got up and he said, the reason why she died is because this community is not being Shomer Shabbos carefully enough. And I was sitting there, I was mortified. How can you say such a thing? Are you a Navi? Do you know the reason why things happen? Do you really think that the reason why God did this is because your next door neighbor isn't keeping Shabbos? So therefore this family should suffer because that family is not keeping Shabbos? Sounds a little strange to me. But Nistarim Darkei Hashem, we don't always understand the way God runs the world, which doesn't mean that we shouldn't make a cheshbon nefesh. For somebody else to point a finger and say, this is why it's happening in your life, is wrong. That's inexcusable. But for me personally, when I'm going through something, to look inward and say to myself, how could it be that this happened under my watch? How could it be that I went through this experience? It means that there's something in my life that I need to fix. There's something in my life that I need to think more carefully about. And that is really where he gets this idea from, that this that the concept is that a person who sees a Sefer Torah that falls on the ground should take something upon himself, to which the Tzitz Eliezer says he has umbrage with that as well. Because how can that be? The Gemara there is talking about one of the great Amoraim. He put his tefillin on backwards. Knew how many times have we done something? Oh, yeah, I didn't realize I said the wrong Shemona Esrei. No, how many people here? You come to Shul Shabbos, you open up the Siddur, you say the wrong Shemona Esrei, and you see the guy is bending down in the middle of Friday night davening, and he's saying Slach Lanu. Happens. Happens to me also, right? It's embarrassing. It means we're not paying attention. It means we're not reading the Siddur the way we're supposed to be. But it happens every so often. So what are you going to say? That person has to go fast because it means I'm not, you know, simim and hashamayim. Really, is that the way we live? No, the Gemara is telling a story about one of the Amoraim. Every time some little thing happened to him in his life, he paid attention. And he said, oh, it means it's a simim. It means I have to fast. It means I have to do tshuva. Writes at Tzitz Eliezer, we don't live like that. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote that halacha. It doesn't say if I put on tefillin one day and I did it the wrong way, I have to fast. That's not the halacha. The Magen Avraham says if you're one of the major chassidim anshei ma'isa, so that's what you do. But for average people like most of us, that's not the expectation of us. So how can that be the source? Which leads Rav Moshe Feinstein to come up with a different idea. My father once told me, again, I'm not casting aspersions on anybody or anything here, but my father once told me that when you find something where there's 10 different reasons that everybody has to try to figure out what the reason is, it means none of the reasons are right. There must be some other reason that we're all missing, something more basic, something more fundamental. If everybody's dancing around the issue and trying to figure out what could it be, it's this Gemara, that Gemara, I don't know. Anyway, it leads Rav Moshe to say that there has to be something else involved here. There must be a different reason why it is that we have an obligation to do so. And he says that the reason why is because Yadua lakol shala ratzel shetipal ha-sefer Torah miyado. Everybody knows that the Gabbai didn't want the Sefer Torah to fall down. Everybody knows the Chazan who trips on his way back to the Aron did not have any intent. V'lachein, afim neima shebezarek Sefer Torah la'aretz. Even though it makes sense, he says, that we should do that, but he says, it's not so clear where this comes from. And Rav Moshe comes up with a new idea, a very innovative idea, where he points it to a Gemara Maseches Tainis, where the Gemara says that on a public fast day, they used to go out into the streets, and they all used to cry, and they would wear sackcloth. And the Gemara says that on a public fast day, they would bring the Sefer Torah out with them into the street and say, look how embarrassing of a generation we are, that we are a Dar Yosom, that we're sitting out here in sackcloth, and we don't have rain, and that's why we're fasting, and our Sefer Torah doesn't even have a home. They would do it as a way of embarrassing themselves, to expose their Sefer Torah to show, you know, we're homeless. We don't even know where to put ourselves because we are a lost generation. So Rav Moshe says maybe that's where it comes from. Anyway, really not so clear what this is all about. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes, number one, in the situation that happened here, the Sefer Torah was in the Aron Kodesh and it fell down. Nobody dropped it. So just Hevi Odeya, you should know, Rav Shlomo Zalman writes in the Sefer Halicha Shlomo, he didn't write it, but his grandchildren wrote it. It's a very credible source. They write in the Sefer Halicha Shlomo that Rav Shlomo Zalman was asked, when it's not dropped by a person, although it's true, the Magen Avraham says that we have this idea of fasting when somebody drops it, Rachmana Litzlan, but if it falls out of the Aron Kodesh by itself, because it wasn't put in properly, in that case, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, there's no need to fast in the first place. So that's for starters. That in this particular situation in our shul, that's what happened. It fell out of the Aron Kodesh. There was nobody who deliberately dropped it. And that's why he says, for starters, he doesn't think the minig ever was in such a case. The minig is that when somebody's holding it and they drop it, and I experienced that terrible experience, so then maybe I should fast. But in such a case where it falls on its own from the Aron HaKodesh, that is something that he says we do not have to do. Rabbi Avadia, in the long, long tshuva that I mentioned before, comes to the conclusion where he says, as I started, it's true that you don't have an obligation to fast. However, there is this practice, there is a minhag that we do so. Rabbi Avadia then says, if I'm an educator, or for that matter, if I am a businessman, and by fasting tomorrow it's going to make me do my job not at full capacity, but I'm on somebody else's dime. I'm being paid by my employer. So do I have a right to make myself in a position where I'm not going to be working as well? Again, the Torah says we have an obligation to fast Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to work Yom Kippur anyway. Torah says you have an obligation, Midrabanan, you have to fast on Tisha B'Av, on Shavuos HaBetamos. So I'm going to go to work on Shavuos HaBetamos. I'm not going to work at full capacity. But Chazal told me you're not allowed to work at full capacity. You have to fast. What can I do? But to take upon myself to fast when I know that by going to school tomorrow to educate, I'm not going to do as effective as a job, but I'm getting a paycheck from them, I don't have a right to take that upon myself. And he says that therefore, the minhag developed that people who don't feel that they're healthy enough to fast, or people who know that it's going to negatively impact the job that they're expected to do, they should give tzedakah. They should give a considerable amount of tzedakah. It's called a pidyon. It's like paying my way out of the fast. It's not like an easy way out. It's the option B. Either I fast, or option B is I take upon myself that I'm going to give tzedakah to do a pidyon. So it happens to be Rabbi Axarot took upon himself that he's going to fast on behalf of the community. He takes responsibility for all of us. So he said, you know, I don't know what everybody else is going to do, but he's going to fast. And I'm not sure, again, I'm not questioning, but I'm just not sure that that works. I'll tell you why. It's very noble and it's beautiful, and it means he takes the community very seriously. But on a technicality, he only found out about it after Shabbos when everyone was discussing it. So here's the technical point. The technical point, and again, Rabbi Willig discussed it with him, is this is not questioning that psak, it's just something to think about. It says that, let's say on Shavuos HaBetamos, do I have to make a declaration that I'm fasting tomorrow because it's Shavuos HaBetamos? No. Chazal instituted that on the 17th day of Tammuz, you fast. So I don't have to take it upon myself. What if I decide, you know, I've done so many terrible averis in the past couple of weeks, I really feel I need a day of tshuva, so I'm going to fast. Okay, that works. I could take upon myself, it's called a Tainus Yachid, a personal day of fasting, which is not relevant to anybody else. It's my own thing. In such a case, the only way it works is if the mincha beforehand, the Gemara says, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, I have to take upon myself by mincha beforehand that tomorrow I'm going to take upon myself a fast day. If you were mekabel the tainus by mincha before, so the Shulchan Aruch says, even if you fast the next day, it doesn't count for anything. So I feel bad. Somebody who was here told me he was jumping on a flight right after Shabbos, and he said, you know, it's actually easy for me because I'm jumping on a flight to Israel, so the fast for me is going to be very short. So he said, I'll take care of everybody. I was at the Minyan. I'm going to fast on the flight. By the time it becomes dark in the sky, it's going to be much earlier than the whole day of Sunday here. So that was a great idea. It's a brilliant idea of his. But I said to him, you didn't take upon yourself by mincha. So it's not clear that that's actually going to really be effective. If you look in the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, where it talks about a tainus yachid, it says that officially you have to take upon yourself the day before. If you don't do that, it's not clear that it works. The other monkey wrench here is the fact that this happened on a Shabbos. Why is that relevant? It's relevant because the Beis Yitzchak, I forgot to mention, also one of the very long tshuvas that has a discussion about this. So the Beis Yitzchak was Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkish. He was one of the great Talmid Chacham before the war. So the Beis Yitzchak writes in his tshuva that maybe there's room to be mekel when this happens on Shabbos. Why? The source of that is as follows. We know that the Gemara tells us, Ha'omed alameis b'shas yitzias haneshama. Let's say somebody is in the room when another individual passes away. I'm not a relative of that person. I never met them. Happened to be on the train. Somebody has a heart attack. I'm watching them lose their life. I can't believe it, but I see it happens. Never met the person. I'll never see them again. So the halacha is, the Gemara says, you have to rip kriya. Why do I have to rip kriya? I'm not related to the person. I have nothing to do with them. Because you have to realize what just happened. You have to recognize something terrible just happened. Whether you know the person or not, there was a loss of life. And it has to impact you. And therefore the Gemara says, Ha'omed alameis b'shas yitzias haneshama. If somebody is present when a life is being lost, so you have to rip kriya. Why don't doctors rip kriya every time they're in a room when somebody loses their life? This is a very important question discussed in the Nishmas Avraham for another time. We've discussed this as well. Very important, Shaila. But based on the Gemara, it would seem that that's really what's supposed to be done. So you have to explain why they don't do it. And it's legitimate that they don't do it. But the halacha really should be that anyone who's there when a mace loses his life, his or her life, they have to fast. Now what happens if that experience takes place on a Shabbos? So obviously I'm not allowed to rip kriya on Shabbos because that's a malacha, koreya. So do I have to rip kriya on Matzai Shabbos? So the Pischei Tshuva in Yerideya in Hilchos Avela says no. Why? Because kriya means it's b'shas chimum. Kriya has to be when I feel the intensity of the moment. So my knee-jerk reaction is like, I can't believe this. I'm ripping my clothing because I can't get over what I'm seeing. But if I have to wait till Matzah Shabbos, until I have a heter to rip kriya because I'm not allowed to do it on Shabbos, by that time, it already cooled down. I spoke to people about it. I got over the initial shock. It's not as jarring on Matzah Shabbos when it's hours and hours later from when the experience actually happened. So that's the halacha. If it happens on Shabbos and I experience the loss of life on a Shabbos, I don't have to rip kriya afterward. This is not to be mistaken. Don't confuse it with somebody who loses a relative as an obligation to rip kriya regardless. We're talking about somebody who just sees a yitzias haneshama, not related at all. They do not have an obligation to do it on Matzai Shabbos. Take for another example. Rav Moshe talks in a tshuva, what happens if I go to Makam HaMikdash? So we know the Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Tisha B'Av that if I go to the Makam HaMikdash b'churbana, if I go to Har HaBayis today, or I see the Har HaBayis where it's not yet rebuilt, I don't have a Beis HaMikdash there, and yesterday we know there was a pigua there, so it's obviously not bibinyana, we're not sovereign over the land, and we don't have freedom to do what we want. In such a situation, you have an obligation to rip kriya. So what happens if I go on Shabbos? What happens if I go on Shabbos? So there's a major dispute. Maybe I should say there's no obligation to rip kriya after Shabbos, because once Matzah Shabbos comes around, it's already been a long time since I went the first time, and it doesn't impact me. I don't have the shock as much as I had it when I first went to the Makam HaMikdash, which in fact is what my father told me in the past. If somebody goes to the Kotel for the first time on a Shabbos, so they don't have to rip kriya Matzah Shabbos because it's no longer the Shas Chimam. They don't feel that jarring feeling of, I'm confronted with Churban Beis HaMikdash in front of my eyes. They don't have that feeling. And therefore, we assume that Shas Chimam is a very relevant factor. Based on that, Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkish writes, what happens if a Sefer Torah falls to the ground on Shabbos? So you're not going to fast today, The whole discussion is about maybe we should fast tomorrow. So he says, by the time tomorrow rolls around, everyone was already schmoozing about it the whole day. Everyone, oh, how did it happen? This, that. You're not as shocked by the experience as you otherwise would have been if it was during the day of the week. Since it's Shabbos, he says, there's room to argue that maybe we should say you don't have an obligation to rip Kriya after Shabbos is over. Either way, the Achronim do tell us that although it's true that we have such a minhag, we have such a practice of ripping Kriya when you have such an unfortunate experience, Rabbi Avadia ends off the tshuva and he says that it would be very special if everyone came together one day in the Beis HaKnesses and they spoke Tainus Dibur and they took upon themselves, forget about a public day of fasting where we're all going to get sick. Let's take upon ourselves a Tainus Dibur. We're going to be Nizar and Lashon Hara for one day. We're going to be careful not to speak about other people, not to be negative about other people in the community for one day. Again, it's not a realistic possibility that we're always going to be perfect in the way we speak. But he says, something terrible happened and you're not up to fasting. Most people aren't up to fasting. But he says, do you know how much it would mean if everybody took upon themselves something else? Instead of a Tainus Haguf, instead of a physical fast day, take upon yourself a spiritual fast day. That I'm not going to talk Dvar Mitalim today. I'm going to redouble my efforts. Like my father always told me, this all started with the Ramban, where the Ramban's interpretation of Aru Asher Lo Yakim Es Divrei HaTorah Azos is referring to this case. So the inverse of that is, Baruch Asher Yakim Es Divrei HaTorah Azos. Blessed is the person who goes through that experience and then redoubles their efforts in Limud HaTorah as a result of what they went through. Which is why, when I discussed this with Dr. Abitan, he said, you know, so I'm going to sponsor the shiur this week. That's the way of saying, I experienced something terrible, I was at that minyan, I saw it, I'm going to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu how much the Torah means to me. And how am I going to do that? I'm going to go to another shiur, I'm going to sit down tonight, I'm going to learn something extra, I'm going to sponsor a shiur, I'm going to show people that this is something valuable, this is something very important, and it's something that I take very, very seriously. In the end, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, the son of Rabbi Avadia, writes that his father once told him, Be'emes shehakol tali b'tshuva v'charata. It's not about, am I fasting, am I not fasting, how many fast days, 40 days, Beis, some say Monday, Thursday, Monday afterwards, some say no fasting at all. He says it's not what it's about, don't get lost in the details. What this is all about is having an opportunity for tshuva v'charata. Shemikanu lahaba yashgichu be'ena pekicha. From here on in, we're going to be careful that such a thing will never happen again. We're going to make sure that we take the proper safeguards and put them in place that we're going to do our best to make sure this never happens. And on top of that, yikvu shir Torah b'halacha l'chalat zibur. We're going to have an opportunity to have a shir, which is exactly what we're doing. We're going to use it as an opportunity not to be down about ourselves, but to learn where does this come from, what's it all about, what's the chashivas of a sefer Torah, what does it mean to us in our lives. If the Gemara says that you have to rip kriya for a sefer Torah shenisraf, sefer Torah shenikra, if we're talking about a discussion here that maybe when a sefer Torah falls on the floor, you have to fast 40 days, some say, we need to then take a step back and realize how much is the Sefer Torah worth to us in our life? What do the values of the Sefer Torah mean to us? And how much do we really spend time thinking about it? And as a result of this experience, his father told him, Yizaru ma'od b'chavad ha-Torah v'lamdeh. We should redouble our efforts, not just in the technicalities of how we store a Sefer Torah in the shul, but also of the kavod ha-Torah v'lamdeh, of honoring the people who learn the Torah, honoring the people who represent the Torah, and understanding that the values that the Torah infuses into our lives are ones that are so indispensable and are so critically important for all of us to appreciate as best as we can. So